Recording is on.
All right.
Stefan, please.
So my name is Stefan Wolf. I'm the CEO of Glyph for the last 10 years. I'm going to step down in June, and Alex Cash, who is my successor, is hopefully in the call as well. But I will stay around in the area and do funny things with LEIs and BLEIs. So you might hear from me. But for today, I thought it would be best if I would give you the presentation and a little bit of the strategic aspirations and everything else that the system comes with. Actually, this year is my 30th anniversary for being on the internet. I had my first digital certificate like 26 years ago. We issued them ourselves. So I'm pretty familiar with the journey that we all have gone through. And I'm very excited about the current development in the industry and in the standard bodies for verifiable credentials. And having that said, let's kick it in. My first intro would be a little bit about who we are, Glyph. In the aftermath of the financial crisis, where nobody knew exactly whom they were doing business with, the regulators around the world, endorsed by the G20 nation leaders, decided to create a global business register. And since a global business register cannot be anchored in the legal system of a country because there is no global government, they have chosen this structure here, where we have a regulatory oversight committee. We have Glyph sitting in the middle, managing the network of LEI issuing organizations, the LOUs. Now, on the next slide, you see how that works. Glyph is a not-for-profit foundation domiciled in Switzerland. Switzerland was chosen as being a neutral ground to everyone else. In the regulatory oversight committee, there are 71 regulators from all around the world. These are securities regulators, insurance regulators, central banks like the Fed, the ECB, the People's Bank of China, and many others. Plus, we have a number of 20 observers, the IMF, for instance, the World Bank, and these kind of folks. Since this is a public-private partnership, we have 15, close to 16 independent directors. They represent from all around the world the private sector. They come from banks, they come from industry organizations, they come from all kinds of other shops. One of the directors came from Levi's, you know, the jeans manufacturer, and so on. And we all have the same ambition to foster the LEI adoption on a global scale. And then we do that with 38 partners. These are the issuing organizations, the registries, if you like. It's a federated, very decentralized system. And up to date, we have like 2.6 million LEIs, which is roughly 90% of global market capitalization, meaning we have the big guys. Next thing is to go into the SME space. This isn't LEI. It's a very, very basic set of data. It's a 20-digit alphanumeric code here, which is an ISO standard. And then you see the name of the company, where it's registered, the registration number, the jurisdiction, the legal form, which is an ISO standard that we maintain, and lots of others, you know, legal domicile, headquarters address. And what you see left and right here are the subsidiaries. So we have the direct children of the entity, but also the ultimate children of the entity, spanning the Christmas tree, as we call it, for the hierarchy of an organization. The top window is what we call level one, business card information, and level two, that's the relationship data that we carry. The LEI is in use globally, predominantly through the means of regulatory mandates. The framework has started in the capital and money markets because that's where the Lehman collapse actually, you know, occurred in the first place. But now we're spinning off into other territories like, for instance, payments, supply chain, and so on and so forth. So it's really gaining ground. And this is a little bit the vision, the triangle that we have in mind. Whether you look at it from a finance point of view, from a supply chain point of view, or from the internet as a network in between, you always have the same issuance, validation and mapping issues with identity. As we all know, the internet was built without identity layer. We all want to heal that. I saw Drummond is on the call from Trust Over IP Foundation, so hi Drummond. So this is what we're all up against, right? To create a meaningful way to provide identity to corporates, businesses around the world. Why do we need secure, verifiable identity, organizational identity? Well, first of all, having a kind of like a seal for a company. It could be a cert, could be a verified credential. It's not good enough because companies don't act, they don't trade. It's always people that trade and act on behalf of the company. The CEO of Glive signs the contract. The CFO of Glive files the financial statement. And the procurement manager at Glive, you know, would purchase cloud, you know, services from a provider. And in all of these cases, you need the verification of the individual and its role vis-a-vis the organization he or she represents. And that's in a verifiable way, of course, which means you need a high level of assurance, technical assurance in this particular case, in order to know precisely whom you're doing business with. We follow the zero trust architecture mantra, meaning never trust, always verify. This is a funny thing, which is fun for you, but when I go to my presentations to the industries, the bankers, the companies and corporates, when I say zero trust, that is very contradictive to what they hear everywhere else. We need more trust, right? I think we all mean the same. We want trust through the means of verification. So I can trust you because I can verify you and I can verify the data that no one is tampered with. So very important, zero trust architecture, end-to-end verifiability. And our mantra for the build out of the system was keep security first. So in all cases where there is a trade-off between convenience and security, for instance, we have always decided to put security first. And this is how organizational entity looks like. You have a cryptographic binding between the representative of an organization, and in that binding you will find the authority that the representative has. On the right side, you see Alice working for Acme, has an employment ID, which is a mapping to another identifier, and the role is general partner. And the signing authority for a general partner is full. That's how easy it is. That's all. There's nothing else that we could add to this. But this allows you to act on behalf of an organization. Now you can start to sign contracts. You can send invoices. You can authorize payment messages. You can purchase something. All of these activities in business life can be now fulfilled there. And for you guys, also on the more technical side, the same mechanism works for code signing, file signing, and all the other activities. It's always the same thing. You want to cryptographically bind the content to the private key of the owner. Here are some examples that we are very excited about. Every company in the world must file a financial statement that is audited by the end of the year. So those organizations who retrieve those audits, they need to know who is the CEO, who is the CFO, who's the general counsel, and so on and so forth. So that's information that is required by the law, that must be submitted by law. And today everything is done on paper. We're now starting to see the first machine-readable formats, and XBRL is an example for that, where people use that. But the signing capability, that's what we add to the picture here, that you can trust a financial statement, that it really comes from the source and that no one has tampered with it. Another example, telecom providers outsource to third parties their call center. So you need to know whom you're talking with, really. And especially in the times of AI and Gen AI, you know, with all the possibilities now for fraudsters to kick in, this becomes almost imperative for the future. Pharmacy, healthcare, aviation, supply chain in general, there are lots of examples. But the sky's the limit. I would not assume that we are brilliant enough to consider all the options that are out there. That's actually something that the market should decide. They should build applications, product, make money with it, and so on and so forth. Our job is to build the infrastructure for global identification and authentication. And this is how it works. A verifiable credential here, in this case, the VLEI, is nothing but a digital representation of what we find in the real world. You have the organization, which is represented with the LEI. You have the person, which could be Stefan Wolf. And you have the role, which could be CEO. Now, the LEI is clear. That is the identification scheme for corporates. But let's look at the other two. Let's start with roles. Roles are very much defined for official representatives in the law of each country. And this is why ISO created the role standard that LIFE maintains, where we figure each official role that is legally sound in the country. So you have managing director versus Geschäftsführer versus you name it in the various languages and countries. And we maintain that standard. Now the person, Stefan Wolf, that's a point where actually the fun is just beginning to kick in, because the person today is identified with passports or ID cards or you know, kind of like driving license and these kind of things, and people use video ident and these kind of things. In the future, all of this will be replaced with digital identity schemes. So I have in Europe, for instance, my EIDAS scheme, I have an EIDAS cert, and I can, basically provide my identity through this cert, and then you would not have the name of the person anymore in the credential, but rather, for instance, the public key of the cert. So this is a digital representation that you then digitally sign with your private key as a holder of this credential. Very importantly, this is not identity for individuals. This is not, we're not saying this is the ID of Stefan Wolf. Stefan Wolf in this context might have multiple roles. I might be CEO of LIFE. I might be board member in another organization. I might be member of a sports club. So I can have multiple roles and multiple credentials, and I would choose my self-sovereign identity mantra. I would choose my wallet to identify myself in the right role in a certain context with that. How does it work? A very simple chain of trust has been implemented, LIFE being the root of trust, endorsed by the G20. Our job is pretty much to provide the infrastructure for the root of trust and the governance framework. We'll come to that in a second. Qualified VLEI issuers, the closest analogy to that would be a certificate authority, for instance. Qualified VLEI issuers go through a very rigid scanning and audit program. Pretty much, like WebTrust and others do it. We want to make sure that the qualified VLEI issuer is really fit for purpose in all of the aspects. They also have to demonstrate that their software is fit for purpose. We run walkthroughs and checks there as well, to make sure that the qualified VLE issues adhere entirely to the governance framework that we put in place. Now, as this is a decentralized system, the qualified VLEI issuers now issue credentials to organizations, like SEALS, for instance, right? It's not LIFE that is doing that work. It is the qualified VLEI issuer. And as there are many of them, in parallel, customers could pick and choose to which qualified VLE issuer they would like to go to obtain their VLEI. But it doesn't stop there. The organization themselves can issue credentials now in a very decentralized way. And when we talk about persons representing organizations, let's think about all of the roles in a company that are not official, that are not in the business register. Think of a procurement manager, a communications manager, a driver of a truck. All of these people could get credentials from the organization, and the difference between those credentials and the VLEI credentials that I mentioned before, the official credentials, is that all of this stays in the private part of the organization and the individual. So the VLEI is of the company, the LEI, that is all public knowledge, that is open knowledge. But when it comes to the people, then this is completely, entirely decentralized. For instance, you could keep your role credential in your wallet and exchange peer-to-peer with somebody else. And there's no central repository, there's no central blockchain, there's nothing like that where you could go to get a full picture on who is on the system. However, as this is a chain of trust, and we'll talk about chain credentials in a minute, all of these credentials can be, followed backward to the root of trust, so you can prove that a person works for this organization and that this organization has been checked and verified by an issuer, and that the qualified VLEI issuer has been accredited and qualified by LIFE. It doesn't stop there. The term credential is a little bit misleading, because when we talk about credentials, we talk about containers holding personal information like passport information. But actually, every piece of data could be put in a container. Could be a bill of lading, could be an invoice, could be, an airway bill, a flight ticket. So organizations can use the system to spawn off additional credentials, two things, two algorithms. An AI could get a credential, for instance, from the organization itself. So it's really a way how you can build decentralized applications where every piece of the information follows the zero trust mantra without a central organ, without a central database or a central a cloud or central ledger or whatever. It's pretty amazing stuff. I've not seen this anywhere else. And this is, you know, driven by the underlying technology and standards that we're using. We come to that in a moment. For the roads, I mentioned the ISO standard, ISO 5009 is what we maintain. Here is the example with the procurement manager again, in a very easy way. And here is the summary for organization credentials as we see them. They are like shipping containers. Any data inside becomes portable and provable and authentic. All the other questions like who issued to, who issued by, not tampered with, all of these kind of things can be verified at real time against the network. By the way, this is also true for revocation. If you revoke a credential, the whole network will immediately see when they verify that this credential has been revoked. It might have been valid at a different point in time, but now it cannot be used for further signing anymore. And since this is a hierarchical system with the root chain of trust, if a company would cease to exist, you would revoke the company credential and all of the, you know, spawn-off credentials, like for people and tools, everything else, they all would expire at the same time, at real-time speed. Now, chaining of credentials. I know that the experts here, and particularly the inventor of this, Sam Smith, could explain this better, but maybe I can offer you my simplistic view on things. A chain credential is nothing but a digital container that is digitally signed by someone. And in that container, you put in something like a private key of another credential, right? And then these credentials are chained with each other. The protocol can now verify that this credential is chained to another credential, and that might be again chained to another credential. So what you create is a chain of linked credentials that stand autonomously for themselves. So you don't need, for instance, if you want to know who's the final owner of a document, who is the final owner of a virtual asset, whatever, you can now look at the credentials. You don't need the ledger anymore to go through the stack to see, you know, who was the last one who authorized a transaction. Here you can do this directly in the credential, and that will change, in my opinion, the way how people construct applications. Because now this can be used in any application across the board, if, you know, the software industry would pick it up and would build the necessary interfaces against it. Authority, I should mention, is a little bit more complicated than what I said before. So we have concepts like multisig. For instance, a certain action can only be triggered if more than one individual signs the activity. There are weightings and all these kinds of things built in. So you can really build a rather complex but handy system for the delegation of authority. And in my words, I would say we're just mimicking what has been in place for hundreds and hundreds of years. That's what people do with paper. A company sends a letter indicating that Stefan Wolf is entitled to do something. I represent this letter to my counterparty. The letter is then checked whether the stamp is okay, and so on and so forth. So what we're doing with the verifiable LEI and the credentialing system underneath is nothing but what you see already on paper. And one thing that people overlook very easily, especially when they are, you know, pretty much into technology, is paper has one major advantage. Paper is by default interoperable. Everyone can deal with everybody else using paper. I can buy a product in, I don't know, in China, you know, and I get my invoice on paper or PDF as an equivalent. And everyone can do this. I don't need APIs. I don't need, you know, complex platforms and all of that. And that is why paper is still around in trade, for instance, international supply chain. People consider that 90% of all documents are still printed on paper because people have it for court cases and proof and things like that. If we want to digitalize the world, right? There are two approaches. One is build the major platform that one size fits all. And every startup company that I have seen in this space wants to do this, of course, right? And get big. Or, and that's the alternative, you create something that is around protocols and chain credentials and things like that. And, you know, from what I've said so far, you will easily anticipate that I'm a believer in the protocol approach rather than the platform approach. So we talked about the authority, and that is signing identity, entitlements, access, attestations, and so forth, credentials. And this could be anything. That's pretty much then in the realm of the builder of the downstream application. All of this is based, and this slide is very important to us. All of this is based on a very robust governance framework. And the most projects that I've seen that failed did not fail because the technology failed. They failed because the people involved couldn't get their acts together. Who owns what? Who pays what? And this and that and so on and so forth. If you have multiple stakeholders in a project, it becomes really, really complicated. And take joint venture companies as an example. Their typical time to live is 3.5 years, and then they fall apart because the owners cannot agree any longer on strategy and budgets and things like that. The same for projects, the same for development. So here we decided to create two governance framework. One is for the VLEI itself and the other one is for the ecosystem. And here we define precisely how the system works, how VLEIs get issued, what kind of verification and validation takes place, what the roles are of the people and organizations involved, and so on and so forth. This governance framework has been developed with the help of the standard from the Trust Over IP Foundation. And not just that, we just not took it and wrote it, but we gave it back to the Trust Over IP Foundation, to the experts there. And there was a rigid review process where we got a final blessing from the industry that this governance framework is fit for purpose. And from what I hear, if at all rivaled by someone else, then I would not know it. So this is one of the most, you know, thought through governance frameworks. And this must be like that because everyone in the world would like to understand what's going on, how it's built, how it's operated, who makes money on what, and things like that. All of this must be clear. So everything we're doing, including the governance framework, is open source. Everything is on our website. You can download everything. You can see everything, you can check everything down to the source code. And I think that is also prerequisite for gaining the buy-in of the industry and also the regulatory side in many countries. Because if you hide this or if you commercialize this, it would not work in our opinion. One example, one that was a big surprise for me because I would never have thought that the regulators, the public bodies would pick it up the first, but it was the European Banking Authority who has a real problem. I mean, they fetch, you know, reports from, I don't know, 60 banks today. And through a law change, this is going to explode to thousands and thousands of organizations filing to them, and which each of the filings, you have multiple persons who are entitled to file and so on and so forth. So managing the user credentials for an FTP site, for instance, like they did in all these years before, does not work anymore. And they learned about our work because they are part of the oversight committee that we have. And they learned of our work and they asked us, hey, can the VLEI help us to solve this problem? And we ran a POC with them and they were satisfied. Gartner gave their blessing in a study. And now we're going to test this with 17 banks, and if that test is successful this year, the EBA will roll it out on a European-wide level. And that would be the first and biggest use case for organizational credentials in a cross-border filing reporting environment. But please, when I say this, this is not the use case for the VLEI in general. You can build any kind of other application with it. This is just the first use case that was put forward by regulators, and it looks really good at the moment. Everyone seems to be very happy with it, so stay tuned. We will keep you updated on the progress. Now, to come to the conclusion, the area technical infrastructure and specifications, I understand that many of you are already familiar with Sam Smith and Carey and these kind of things. Here, I would like to show you a little bit of an overview of what we're trying to do with the VLEI. The VLEI should be interoperable with everybody. Like I said, paper, right? So it is not just our network. It's any cloud-based application, any ledger application. We have now predominantly in Asia lots of companies who deal with virtual asset exchange on blockchain, and they would like to use the VLEI for identification purposes against their chain and so on. So it's now spreading out, and we're very excited about that. We also have a representation to the outside world, the WebS. That's the layer that we built around the identifiers that we use internally. Looks like this is going to work. The strategy is now clearly to talk with all the involved parties, gain their interest, you know, and start building prototypes with them and so on. We use open standards and open source. Carey is the tool for key management. We think that key management is at the bottom. It's the essence of everything. If you don't manage your keys properly, if you create security risks there, then the whole system is void. But key management comes also with features like key rotation and credentials and all of that, and the protocol for the verification. And all of that is implemented in Carey. There is a 140 pages white paper on Carey.1. For those who would like to read it, I can really recommend it. It's tough stuff, but everyone who read it through came back to us and said, wow, this is something really great. And the next level are atomic chain data containers, the verifiable credential format that we're using. They are W3C compliant for proof format, and the ACDC is an IETF standard as well as Carey, and eventually is going to become an ISO standard as well. Our commitment to open source and open standards is absolute 100%. We're not going to use anything else. And here's some additional information about Carey and ACDC. I'm happy to share the slides with you after this presentation so you don't have to take everything. And we have the recording, of course. And that is the end of my presentation. I wanted to give everyone a chance to digest this, and then if you have any questions, would be very happy, my team as well, to take them.
Thank you, Stefan. Thanks a lot. Any questions? I got one quick question. So, Stefan, earlier you mentioned about qualified VLEI issuer. So can you go a little bit deeper into how do you kind of qualify the issuers? Like what kind of governance framework do you use to ensure that these qualified issuers are indeed qualified?
Good news is that with us today is Carla McKenna. She was for many, many years the chair of TC68 and ISO. She is also head of standards at Glive, head of America's Glive. And she was also the main author of the governance framework. So why don't we give it to Carla to answer this question? Carla, if you hear me.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes, so the qualification program and the requirements and the governance are part of the governance framework that Stefan reviewed before. We have a qualification agreement, and then there's a structure of seven additional appendices to that agreement. Glife already has extensive experience in being able to run programs for accrediting our LEI issuers and going through an annual accreditation of our LEI issuers. And so we expanded this program in order to be able to launch a qualification program for our qualified VLEI issuers. We take them through a process which we look at the organization, whether they could sustain an operation, both technically, from a governance perspective, and also business operations for becoming a qualified VLEI issuer. We put them through a business evaluation, and then a second part of the program is to make sure that they can technically handle the issuance, the revocation of the VLEI ACDC credentials, and also the key rotation and pre-rotation requirements that are outlined in the governance framework. Then we issue them their qualified VLEI issuer credential that extends the chain that Stefan showed us before, the VLEI chain of trust, give them a trust mark, and allow them to commence operations.
Thank you, Carla. Just for clarity, the carry and ACDC are at the moment with trust over IP. They can become eventually a trust over IP standard, as far as I'm informed.
Got it. Thank you.
So any other question?
Yes, one more question. So is the LEI program mostly just in Europe, or do you have presence and initiatives in the United States as well? And then the follow-up question will be, in United States, for example, a lot of companies use Dun & Bradstreet, right, the DUNS number as their kind of business identifier. Is there a plan to kind of cooperate with them so that we can have a more, I guess, adoptions for this kind of technology?
I'm very grateful for this question because that's a complicated beast. Number one, the DUNS business model is they assign those numbers to everyone, and then they sell the data to the users of the data. The American government has just recently decided to fade out DUNS numbers because they don't want to pay the license fees anymore. And in the beginning of the system, when the regulators designed the LEI system, they had in mind an open, free-of-charge usage model for the LEI, which was a little bit, the opposite of what Dun & Bradstreet did. Dun & Bradstreet is predominantly in the United States and Asia. We don't see them very much in Europe. But for the LEI, it's completely different. The LEI was implemented as a global scheme. So we have LEIs in over 222 jurisdictions. I think the only jurisdiction that does not have an LEI at all is North Korea, but all other countries, all other jurisdictions are covered with the LEI. The Asian Development Bank did an analysis how difficult it would be to deal with the LEI, to obtain one, and so on and so forth. And they used countries like Cambodia, Fiji, Vietnam, and so on. And the study is available on the internet. It revealed that it's absolutely a breeze to get familiar and to get acquainted and hosting an LEI. In the United States, as you can imagine, there's a big population because that's where the whole crisis originated from. There are several regulations in the United States. We have six agencies from the states, the SEC, the Fed, FDIC, CFTC, and a couple of others. And these agencies have mandated the LEI for domestic use in their reporting schemes, as well as for overseas companies reporting into the United States. So the LEI, to answer your question, is a truly global phenomenon.
Thank you. David, you're in the queue.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Stefan, for your talk. I've come full circle in my listening. When I was a student at university, I listened to Stefan Wolf, and now I'm retired, I'm listening to Stefan Wolf. So that's quite interesting.
You mean Stefan Wolf?
The question... Yes, yeah, Stefan Wolf, yeah. I listened at university to him. The question is, organizational have credentials, and they issue them to the roles. But, of course, you've said organizations don't do anything. It's people who do it. So that means that people within the organization are issuing role credentials and organizational person credentials to people. And what protections do you have on this? Because, of course, if the wrong person gets hold of that organizational credential, then they can issue roles to anybody anywhere.
Maybe I was bit imprecise in this, and thank you for the question. By the way, I know Steppenwolf, Born to be Wild, I made this my mantra for my life. But coming back to your question, it's not that every individual in an organization can issue credentials. This is tied to the governance framework that Carla was describing just a minute ago. So it is in the interest of the organization to make sure that they have the right rigor around the issuance and the revocation of credentials because, and this is an important aspect, they are fully legal liable for all damage caused by misuse credentials. So where individuals working within an organization or customers to an organization or patients to a hospital, all of these credentials would be issued by the organization itself and in most cases also in a multi-sig way. This is not true for the official role credentials because there we have put another barrier, if you like, in. Official role credentials like my credential, the CEO credential, cannot be issued by the organization itself. They have to go back to the qualified VLEI issuer, apply for such a role credential, and the qualified VLEI issuer would check against authoritative sources. For instance, in my case, they would look up the business register in Basel in Switzerland to see if I'm authorized to sign on behalf of Clive. So it's a pretty rigorous process around that. When I said in the beginning, security first, this is also true for the processes that we build around it.
Yeah, great. Thank you. I'm glad you've got that extra level of protection for the chief roles in the organization.
This is a clarification question. Dun Bradstreet model a little bit, like when you search for Dun's number, you can find the information about that business. In this case, in a more decentralized manner, where does the business information, such as business name and those kind of metadata around that particular business or legal entity reside? Does it reside with the qualified issuers or does it reside with the Glide Foundation?
Another good question, really, because people sometimes confuse this. So number one, we have 38 issuers of LEIs. We're talking about the LEIs first. And they present the route in each case. So they have the data and everything at hand on the company, the name, legal address, and these kind of things. But the attributes are limited. So we're not carrying information like number of employees or credit ratings and things like that, because we're really focusing on the core of identity in this regard. And then you can build many, many products around that to carry this information. Like Standard & Poor's, for instance, they have mapped the entire entire database of LEIs to their S&P identifier. And now they can offer services around their data sets and ratings and everything else to the world. Glyph is collecting this information. We're maintaining a copy of it. We call it the golden copy. And that is a file that we host on our website on a daily basis. And everybody can download this file. There are no restrictions. You can do whatever you want with it. You don't even have to log in. We also have a database version with APIs. We have our website where you can do Google-like searches and things like that. But predominantly, Glyph provides a copy for convenience reasons, right? But the authority is with the 38 agencies that we manage and control. And for the VLEI system, it's even more decentralized because Glyph is not issuing verifiable credentials at all. We're just, maintaining the governance of the system, the network, some parts of the open source software that people can then use to build applications around it, to become QVIs, anything.
Got it. Thank you. And a follow-up clarification question. What if there's conflict, for example, like there's multiple issuers issuing different VLEIs to the same entity? Like how do you do conflict resolution?
The LEI is a unique, unambiguous identifier that's never going to be renewed, reused, that's never going to be used twice. So it's a completely deduplicated system. So you can trust that each LEI is absolutely unique. And even if a company goes out of business, we would carry the information forever that this company once existed. Now, as every system can have weaknesses, the GLIFE role is also to be kind of like the guardian and gatekeeper and the compliance officer of the network. So we have very, very, very intense, you know, data quality checks, check for deduplication and everything else that are all online. So each record, each data element, or even each facet of each data element goes through that check gateway prior to being published. And we detect usually those duplicates. In the event that we would also miss a duplicate or a wrong data set, there's always the possibility for the entire world, for everyone on the internet, to challenge the data. If you have information that a certain record might be wrong, you can challenge this with the LEI. So basically, you can outsource the verification and the validation for free to the LEI issuer network, and they will come back to you with either, yes, you're right, we have updated the data, or no, you're not right, this is not the legal truth that we find in a certain jurisdiction. All of this is documented on our website, but I must admit there's a wealth of information, so it's sometimes time-consuming to dig through all of this. In case someone has questions to these more governance issues and quality issues, I would be happy to provide you links to the relevant pages.
Thank you. Sorry, any last questions for Stefan and the GLIFE team?
If not, I would like to make a final comment.
Great.
And especially in the light of the W3C community and your work towards standards and, you know, standards adoption and everything else, we are not in the game for creating technical standards or creating, I don't know, anything like that. Our main driver for what we're doing is the LEI and the fostering of the adoption of the LEI. And as in many applications, you need a digital version of the LEI, we created a VLEI, which is nothing but a container for the LEI itself. So if you want to have a verifiable LEI, then this is the system to go to, right? And then we build interfaces and APIs and everything else that you can use that information. But we are all, of course, aware that there's a whole industry around that who might have different ideas on technology standards and everything else. We try to stay out of this. We try to explain the concept. We try to explain why we believe that this is the right thing to do. And I hope that GLIFE is also able to do things right. So this is our driver for everything. So absolutely clear, we would love to work together with W3C. We would love to see convergence of standards and everything else. And we will do everything we can to do that. But we are not a standards body. That's what you guys and Trust Over IP, ISO, ITF, and these guys are doing.
Thank you. All right, any last questions before we wrap up? Well, I just want to take a moment to thank you, Stefan, and Carla, Alexander, and the GLIFE team for hopping on and taking your precious time to actually present here. This is very informative. And actually, earlier I was going to say this is actually one of the sessions requested by our community to do more cross-community collaborations and discussions. So thank you for being here. And also, I just want to say thanks again, Stefan, for your great work on the open source communities. And hope you have a great life in a few months. So thanks a lot.
And then thank you all for your interest and for having us here today. And let's see where we meet again. Take care. Goodbye.
All right. This concludes this week's W3C CCG meeting. And we will publish the recordings in the next 1 or 2 days. Thanks.
Thank you. Goodbye.